at you from the ATL, from inside the paint and beyond the arc. This is nothing but Nest, your Atlanta Hawks podcast. Now, here are your hosts, DeShaun Tate and Caleb Johnson.
Welcome into Nothing But Nest, this second episode of the week, as the Hawks are 9-6 overall, still third in the Eastern Conference and first in the Southeast. As I still continue to say, I don't take that very seriously, that that division is just a mess right now. But anyways, Caleb Johnson here with you and my co-host DeShaun Tate for Nothing But Nest. DeShaun, how you doing, man?
Caleb, let me tell you something. Look here, my brother, I got something. This is DeShaun Tate's version of liquid death right here.
Okay.
The key is, I understand it's in a coffee cup, but I won't tell you what's in it. So no, I'm good, man. I need to, when we get done with this, I'm gonna have to do the shave the head thing and go to work. I'm not lucky enough to do the comb over thing like you, but I don't hear many
comb over.
Yeah, I don't hear the comb over and the faux hawk and all that, but I haven't gotten that lucky. But I'll say this much: I don't hear many complaints from the ladies, man.
Okay, there we go. See, DeShaun is in a good mood right now. Dare I say, DeShaun is winning right now, and that's something that the Hawks obviously did not do last night, as they were run out the gym by the Celtics, 126-101. I feel like there's a couple of different things that you could look at when it comes to this team. The thing that, hey, DeShaun, we were ahead of the curve. Can I say that? We were ahead of the curve in getting to talk about the Hawks' three-point shooting, because the Hawks' lack of three-point shooting glared its head. And I thought that was something interesting, especially going into a game where I remember I asked Nate McMillan pregame, hey, you know, this is top scoring team in the league, one of the, if they're not number one, top 3-point shooting teams in the league. How do you combat that when you know you aren't shooting threes very well? And of course, you know, Nate kind of went into this idea of, you know, we gotta take the open look, we gotta not force things, you know, play to our strengths, you know, very much coach speak type stuff. But I genuinely was interested to see when a team like Boston comes in, who I don't think Atlanta matches up very well at all. And I think this game showed it big time. But I wondered, you have a hot shooting team, and then you have an Atlanta Hawks team who the focus has been more on defense and the shots haven't been falling so much. And then you end up with this, like Boston. Yeah, Boston's first in points per game. They score about 120 points per game, scored 126 in this one. They're first in three-pointers made. They normally shoot about 15 threes a game. This one, they knocked down 21. So it's just, it felt like all of the good things that Boston does, they did in this game.
Yeah, listen, I mean, let me say this first and foremost, putting my hand up, because it is definitely me. I was wrong so far. I know it's still early in the season and everything else, but I was wrong about Boston. I thought the hit that they took with, you know, the head coach.
Yeah,
I thought that was going to have a much bigger, be a much bigger detriment to this team than it has been and shown so far. Like, they're coming off the NBA Finals and they're showing it. They're looking like it. So I'm going to get that part out of the way first. One of the other things that was very telling for me, and I want to, you know, respectfully show or give some credit to Peyton Pritchard from the Boston Celtics, because yes, he's a point guard. He's very good. He's very experienced. He's a winner on all levels in the game of basketball. And he's one of the guys that I anticipated being as good as he is and showing people that he's better than what they probably think. Outside of that fact, you start looking at the pieces that were missing from the Boston Celtics. Yes, the big man in the middle, Williams, is still out on injury and so forth. That's a big piece of it. That's a big part. But let's get that out of the way. When you don't have your defensive enforcer, especially on the perimeter, being Marcus Smart on the floor, you don't have Malcolm Brogdon, who's one of the better backup point guards in this league, a former rookie of the year and just a very smart, cerebral, high IQ type of big guard in this league. You don't have a point guard out there in your Boston. You're doing this to the Atlanta Hawks. That is unacceptable if you're the Atlanta Hawks. Like, there's no other way to put this. I also think them being able to do that is almost giving it, you know, a bad look to what the future of basketball could look like going out there. It's like going out there and playing a game of football and whooping somebody, you know, by X amount of touchdowns with no quarterback. It looked bad for the Hawks. It was bad for the Hawks. You got guys like Jaylen Brown out there who, give him credit, is a great player, not just a good player, not just a really good player, above average, above mediocre, a great player, has Atlanta ties, looked like he was taking it personal, like somebody's like somebody took his girlfriend from him or something, you know what I mean? So it's just, I was really disappointed with this performance from the Atlanta Hawks, not just from a shooting standpoint.
Well, and you talk about them not having a point guard. I mean, the Celtics still have Derek White out there, and I think that's big. Like, their depth is next level, and that's what I did a radio spot on John and Hugh at 92.9 The Game, and one of the things that I gave credit to is to Brad Stevens. I give credit to Brad Stevens for knowing when to step away because he wasn't able to adequately coach that team, or they weren't listening to him at least. And then I give him props for his roster construction. DeShon Tate, Sam Hauser was a plus 35.
Yeah.
Plus 35 on Wednesday night as he went 5 of 6 from three. It was that kind of night where they managed to keep Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown at bay, per se, you know, around 20 points, which when you got a guy like Jason Tatum who's averaging closer to 32, that's an impressive thing. And you think, okay, good, they're limiting him. But no, like, that was just, it was role players. Everybody else is stepping up. The ball was moving extremely freely for Boston, and they were able to knock down shots. And then you add on the fact of, and Nate McMillan kept referring to something last night, and I don't know why, but in the moment, it wasn't clicking with my brain. And I had to ask you, DeShon Tate, of Nate kept talking about the Hawks playing through the basket and the fact of, you know,
through the net. Yeah.
Through the net. Yeah. Thank you. And I was like, what do you mean through the net, through the net? No, he's talking about the fact of the Hawks weren't able to get rebounds because Boston kept hitting all their shots. And then you're ending up going on the opposite end of the floor with Boston's defense already set. And that just makes it that much tougher to be able to score on them. Throw on the fact of Boston's able to switch 1 through 5. And while some teams say that, Boston, much like a team that Atlanta is going to see again this weekend, is a team that can switch 1 through 5. Why is that bad? Because your rebounding machine, Clint Capella, can't be out on the floor for regular minutes. Like, Clint Capella plays 18 minutes in this game while the rest of the starters are in the past 30 minutes. Why is that? Because Nate had to get him off the floor because those mismatch happen. And it feels like it compounds. You know, there's little things that the Hawks are dealing with when it comes to this three-point shooting stuff that's been a massive problem for them. DeShon, we talked about last week where, you know, Atlanta had a quarter where they were 9% for the quarter. Yeah. You know what's worse than that? 0%, which is what they shot in the first quarter against the Celtics. They were 15% at the half and ended up, you know, shooting 7 for 32. Two of those were shot in garbage time with like the last 4 minutes of the game. So it's just, it feels like while there's so much good that this Hawks team has, and the fact that they had won 9 games up until this point with their deficiencies, this Boston team is truly a team that brings out the worst in Atlanta. And really, it shows you all of the dysfunctional parts of this team currently. And I think it was problematic that this also happened on national TV, as this was an ESPN game.
Yeah, and you know, when I think I think some of this is something that is good for the Hawks. You know what I mean?
I would agree.
You're gonna have your times when you look really good. Look what we did against, you know, Milwaukee. We beat them. You know, the team that everybody's expecting to either A, you know, go to the finals, win the Eastern Conference, or maybe even win the whole damn thing. Look what we did to them in games that didn't matter in exhibition and so forth overseas. Okay, well, we don't get credit for that. Well, then let's talk about we won 2 out of 3 when they did count. You're going to have those instances. Me and you talk, Caleb, leading into the even starting this podcast and referencing the fact that there's going to be during this whole season, because yes, especially early when they're trying to kind of get a good footing under themselves and learn, develop, establish chemistry because they've got new players and everything else. There's going to be some times that this stuff looks really good. It's going to look like championship level. Can the Atlanta Hawks really do some stuff that we've never seen before? And then there's going to look like some stuff where it's like, I think if, you know, I think Deshaun Tate's great-grandmother can do better than these guys. Yeah. And she's dead. You know what I mean? So from that, well, I mean, we just going to tell it. Listen, you know, we don't play radio here. This is the program, okay? But this is the reality, though. You just mentioned something. Now I'm getting fired up. My version of Liquid Death, I must remind you. Uh-huh. But you talked about the job that Brad Stevens did with getting his team together, putting them, you know, putting together a nucleus and so forth, whatever, what have you. The bench contribution. The Atlanta Hawks scored 23 points off their bench. The Boston Celtics. 44. They almost doubled the bench contribution. Okay. Sam Hauser. The other night I went to check out his brother, Joey Hauser. Okay. Looked really good for Michigan State. I don't know what the Hausers have got going on, but they're not building houses the way it looks like Atlanta Hawks are doing. That's for sure. These guys are balling out. And he even mentioned in the post-game presser talking about Sam Hauser is that they kind of have that mentality stemming from last year going to the finals where they know their bench contribution was just not enough, and they took that personal, and they wanted to show that on last night. They're now on an 8-game win streak. Anything that the Atlanta Hawks threw at them, what is the old saying, you know, everything but the kitchen sink. Like, Atlanta was doing that, but guess what? Boston had an answer. That's the thing. It's not just about, because you in this game of basketball, it is evident that you know, there's going to be times when you look really good, but you know that team's going to go on a run at some point. Like, you just know it's coming. It's going to all be about how you respond as Boston. How do you respond to when that team goes on a run? That's exactly what they did. That's what I always pay attention to. For any of those that are out there and are listening, what are you keeping your eyes on? It's not about when teams go up or when teams fall and they go, you know, down into a rabbit hole. How does the team that has the lead, the big lead, how do they respond to the other team when they finally make their run? I don't think anybody's questioning this morning on how they responded to the Atlanta Hawks, and they're playing with all the confidence in the world.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that you mentioned there that are key to what happened last night. But then also you start looking at the bigger picture of the season, and that is Boston being a team that can not let you go on runs, because they're going to stay right there with you. And that's got to be insanely frustrating. The other part of this is when, you know, we talk about the Hawks' struggles from three. Nate McMillan mentioned something when it comes to it can mess with your psyche when you're not seeing shots fall and the other team is constantly knocking down shots. And then you feel like you have a moment where things are connecting and they stick right there with you. Like, that can be the only word I know to use, demoralizing. But let's hear from Nate McMillan as he talked about just the fact of, you know, the Hawks and how their shots are struggling right now.
So every time we came down, we got nothing easy. And the open looks that we did get, as I can recall, we didn't knock down those shots. And I think, you know, guys tend to get frustrated when they don't see that ball going in the net.
So you've got a team who's the best in the league in three-point shooting. You've got another team who is bottom of the league in three-point shooting. And that's what it really felt like, is multiple times where the Hawks were struggling and then couldn't get back on defense, or were just, I won't say looked tired defensively, but we're definitely getting like outworked defensively. And then that's when shots truly continued to fall for Boston. The other part of this is you talked about the Celtics bench. That's not been a place of strength for this Hawks team this season. I think if I remember correctly, coming into this Boston game, I believe the Hawks bench is 26th in the league in scoring. They're not helping themselves out. Where have you seen some changes happen? You've seen the fact of AJ Griffin's now getting more minutes, specifically the last two games. Justin Holiday, Deshaun, did not play against the Sixers in Philly. That one slipped completely past me without me realizing of like, oh yeah, that's right. AJ Griffin got all of those minutes. And AJ Griffin continued to get kind of that first look off the bench against the Celtics. However, AJ wasn't knocking down shots that he normally hits and was kind of contributing to the problem. But like, the bench isn't scoring. And when you focus so much on defense in the offseason, it's one of those, you know, grass isn't always greener if you just solely focus on defense. And that's kind of what I feel like we've seen from the Hawks bench so far.
Yeah, we talked about this the other day about the pieces that they're missing from their scoring. I don't know if they underestimated or whatever the case may have been. You know, and it's great why you do have somebody like a Debo Murray, who can come in and be, you know, instant offense for this team, but he's not going to make up for everything and everyone. The Bogey Bogdanovich, which is not by any means an excuse for, you know, as poorly as they've shot it, amongst other things, scoring, whatever, what have you. But they don't have the Gallinari from last year. Pieces that chipped in. Kind of reminds me of football when I'm watching. Reminds me of Tom Brady sometimes. It ain't always about going for the long ball. Debo Murray is the long ball here, okay? But sometimes you have to pick and pop. Little pieces here, little pieces there. I don't know, dink and dunk, if you will. Pun intended for the basketball reference. You have to be able to get those little the little things that, you know, Kevin Huerter was doing as a shooter. The little things that Danilo Gallinari was doing. There wasn't a ton of times when Cam Reddish looked really good, but when he did, he looked really good. There's a reason for why when we saw Cam Reddish, we was like, this is the Cam Reddish we've all been waiting for. It's just that when he wasn't looking like the Cam Reddish you needed, he also looked like that too. But when he was on, that's when you had some of those little bit of scoring as well. It wasn't often. It feels like a long time ago, but it wasn't that long ago when we did see somebody who's instant offense off the bench, like a Lou Will, that you could kind of account for. You don't have that anymore either. Now you're bringing in a whole new regime. You're picking up some Holiday brothers who's primarily known for their defense. Anything they give you on the offensive end is going to be a bonus anyways. So you have to consider all of these different things. Debo Murray's not going to make up for that. Trae Young's three-point shooting, even if it is from a different area or zip code, is not going to make up for that. Onyeka Okongwu is already limited from the perimeter and scoring in general. We need to talk about being limited in scoring. There's Clint Capella there as well, because everything he's getting is going to be garbage around the basket. So considering all these different things, you're going to have some of those issues. You're going to have to address them relatively soon. Everybody in this town wanted that next scorer or that next star type of player. They've got that, but that's not going to be the only answer. They've got to figure out some things, X's and O's, on the clipboard.
Well, and that's actually something pretty important. And we'll get to this on the other side of the break, Deshaun, of looking at, you know, you add a big piece like a DeJounte Murray to this team, and a lot of fans think, you know, that's a fix-all. Like, that's only going to make this team better. But it's just not that easy, especially when a guy like Trae Young has never played with a guy like this before. So having to deal with all of those things might be a reason why shots aren't falling like they are. But we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Okay, Deshaun, I kind of alluded to it before the break, this idea of you know, you add this big piece in DeJounte Murray, and people think it's going to make you that much better, and it is, but it's not always a seamless transition. I want to play a clip from Trae Young after the Celtics game, because he really got into something very specific about why maybe his shot isn't falling and why maybe other guys' shots aren't falling. And it has to do with between the ears, essentially.
Just trying to add in DeJounte, trying to make it as comfortable and everything for him. I think for me early on, I've been trying to think about it too much and just instead of just going out there and playing and just playing free. So I think that's when we get back to just playing free, playing confidence with confidence and just out there just playing within the flow of the game. I mean, we're a way better team than when we're just thinking out there.
Overthinking, Deshaun Tate, is what Trae Young says leads to his struggles this year. Are you buying that?
Yep, I am. And I'm going to tell you one of the reasons why. One of the biggest reasons. Because you're talking to an overthinker. So I get it.
Yeah, true that.
I'm right there with you. Wait. I was about to say, are you ain't supposed to agree with me, Caleb. Like, you ain't supposed to be like, yeah, I agree. Deshaun, you're the biggest overthinker I know. You're talking about yourself.
I do too. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that being said, though, like, so I get that part. And guess what? It's considerate for all the people who are like, oh, well, Trey's a ball hog and I don't like his style. And you know, he's a street ball player and he's all about self. Well, guess what? He's trying to get his other guys involved. I got a good feeling that when Nate McMillan, got on that jet, that big, expensive, luxurious jet, okay, and went over to Oklahoma City or wherever and met up with Trey before the season, and they sat down, I'm sure had a nice dinner over some real good wine and everything else, okay, they had some of these same similar conversations about Trey being more of a leader, Trey being more of a showing his leadership capabilities, a winner, amongst other things, getting other guys involved, because that's what affects winning. And they want it to be contagious. He wants to teach Trey some of those things, which in this situation, I think that's Trey being considerate, doing what he's supposed to do, growing into being more of a leader of this team, wanting to get somebody else involved. You don't want to bring somebody like a DeJounte or another star player, only using quotations, because he's still kind of straddling that fence, walking that fine line again. But as great of a player as he is, you don't want to bring him in here and he's unhappy and you're not considering him and the chemistry's all messed up. And we're still figuring it out. We're less than 20 games in. I mean, we're less than a fourth of the season here still that we're talking about. So there's still so much to – nobody should kill Trey over this, you know, these comments. He's trying to consider other guys and, you know – as great of an assist man, facilitator, distributor as he is, you think it should just come naturally, but it's different for different guys. I'll be honest. I have so much more to say, but I'm gonna leave it right there, Caleb. I don't have a problem with that at all.
No, I actually, I'm right there with you. I appreciated the fact that he was this genuine with me when I asked about it, just for the fact of he could have completely brushed it off. You know, somebody of these guys would be like, oh, we gotta shoot through this. And it's like, okay, sure, you have to shoot through this, but like, why, what specifically isn't happening? And for him, he's saying he's overthinking. You know what this draws me back to, though, Deshaun? That Miami series messed Trae Young up between the ears. Like, his inability to get free, to get shots, to then all of a sudden, I need to play off the ball, and all of these sorts of things. Like, I feel like the lingering from that Miami playoff series is still affecting him now, because now he's saying, well, I need to get my teammates involved. But it's like, haven't we always known Trae Young to just be a free shooter, and sometimes too much of a free shooter, where you're like, you got to reel that in. And now with the maturity process, and you want a guy like Trae Young to mature, because that's how he becomes a better player and a better leader. With that process also comes overthinking, where, you know, you're wanting to make sure, am I taking my teammate out of this? And I don't think DeJounte is the type of guy who, you know, can't handle maybe taking a backseat or not being the star, the final, you know, the guy to shoot the last shot, that sort of thing. Like, he's level-headed enough and very mature and comfortable in himself that he can handle all these things. But you still, being Trey, you still want to get your teammate involved. So it's making a lot of sense, and it's such a great explanation for why just immediately adding a piece isn't always a fix-all. But it also leads to a bigger discussion, Deshaun, when it comes to what did we say coming into this season about the Atlanta Hawks? The fact that you added DeJounte Murray with Trae Young, you gave the Hawks one of the best backcourts in the league.
Yeah.
And this is something that you and I have kind of kicked around for the last couple of weeks of when we want to discuss this. And I think now's the time is getting into this idea of who has the best backcourts in the league, and where do the Hawks kind of rank when it comes to all of these teams. Deshaun, before I turn things over to you and kind of get your thoughts, you've got, of course, Atlanta with Trey and DeJounte. You look over at the West and Memphis, you know, Morant and Bane, who Bane's currently out with an injury, so that's something to keep in mind. You go the other backcourt that was extreme, you know, I would say is a big upgrade in the Eastern Conference with Garland and then them adding Mitchell to things this year. Philly, Maxey and Harden. Harden's obviously not playing. The Timberwolves with Russell and Edwards. The Suns with Chris Paul and Devin Booker. The Warriors with Stephen Clay. And then, shoot, I'd even throw in right now, just because I think you have to consider them, Mike Conley and Jordan Clarkson, and the way that Utah Jazz has really surprised us. And I think that backcourt has kind of surprised us too. Where do you see, Deshaun, the Hawks kind of falling in line with the rest of the best backcourts in the NBA?
Today, somewhere near the bottom.
Sure.
Based off of what we're seeing and what we... But you know what? The funny thing is but the feeling of what I get of where it will be. And for stints of what we've seen. I mean, think about how bad Trey has been. We're already having conversations about how putting him in the conversation of some of the best backcourt play in the NBA. Think about how poor Trey has played and shot the basketball, because we already know what he can do. And I think that we have a good feeling of we already know where how good this backcourt is going to be going forward. Ant-Man and Russell.
Yeah.
While that's good, I don't think that tops Trey and DeJounte. I don't think it tops Trey and DeJounte for what we've seen so far, respectfully. A large part of that is because of Russell, obviously a good player. You're talking about Phoenix. Yes, Chris Paul's out at the current time. I don't anticipate it being extensively. I don't think that they're better than Chris Paul and Booker. Obviously, that experience and where they've been makes a huge difference. But it's because a lot of these guys have played longer together than what Trey and Debo has. Now, a duo or a tandem that has played the same amount or had the same amount of time together, is this, you know, this Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, Garland and Donovan Mitchell duo, you know, in a situation where you have some. Listen, I've been watching Garland since high school. I didn't anticipate this being him. The times that I've seen him, which was not a ton in high school, but the times that I have watched, I didn't think he was going to be I thought they were crazy for getting rid of Sexton. But you said it on this program before, how much we really enjoy and really embrace being proven wrong, and Garland has done that. So give him credit. By the way, you have a guy named Caris LeVert and one or two others over there, by the way, too. As far as Philly goes, that's just too much erraticness for me. Like the key when you're comparing these backups a lot of times is the fact of not so much is the main bat, not so much is the main player, which would be Harden in this situation, Ja Morant in this situation, probably Trae Young in this situation. And when we're comparing, it's not just about that first guy, but is the second guy, can they top either one of those guys on the Hawks? Usually that answer is no. So where you have a Bane, I don't think nobody's taking Bane. I don't think nobody's taking Maxey. I don't think anyone's taking, you know, over in Utah, the player Conley. Like, I don't think anyone's taking that guy over either one of those players from the Hawks. So that's where I think that the Hawks kind of have the edge over many of these teams, mind you, even while not necessarily playing very well.
I'm going to take this in a completely different direction. And it's just something that as I was looking at these tandems, at these backcourts in the NBA, it felt like there's a very glaring issue going on right now, Deshaun, and that's there aren't really any good tandems. Like, there's the name recognition of everybody, but is both players in that group playing really well this season? For most of them, I don't think so. I'm shooting up Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland up to the top of that list just because they've come in, and you're right, they're just as new as Trae Young and DeJounte Murray, but those guys have figured it out very quickly. And Donovan Mitchell is doing something that I didn't think possible because I didn't have a high expectations of Donovan Mitchell. I thought, you know, he's a volume shooter, and I just didn't see him coming into that Cleveland team and really changing things immediately. I was wrong. And so that's why, like, the way that they're just playing right off the bat with one another and the way that team is playing really well, I think shoots them to the top of the list.
Okay, look, how much are we going to eat crow for not talking about Steph and Clay?
Well, but I will talk about Steph and Clay and say that's a one-sided grouping as well, because Steph Curry is playing out of his mind. He scored 50 points on Wednesday night.
50 points, yeah.
And they lost to the Suns.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Dude, that, they haven't won. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Please forgive me.
No, you're fine.
You know me well enough, long enough, Caleb. You know that I'm going to do that from time to time. Forgive me. But, dude, over 50 points. He's done that like at least 12 times in his career already. This is ridiculous what we're seeing out of this dude, man. I mean, I'm just – it's crazy to also think that this Golden State team has not won a game on the road yet. This season, coming off a championship. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I just had to let that be known.
No, you're good. But I think, like, with Steph and Clay, is you looking at that group and you look how Clay Thompson's been shooting since the start of the season, that's not been good. And you had to wonder with all the knees and the ankle, like with all of his surgeries and the ACLs and the Achilles and everything. I can't remember what all injuries that Clay Thompson's experienced, because it felt like it's been so many, but he's not the same guy. So name recognition, they get up towards the top of the list, but they're not actually playing to that caliber. You talked about, you know, Chris Paul not being available, and so that I think that hurts that tandem of Devin Booker and Chris Paul, even though the Suns are winning. James Harden not playing, so you can't really adequately judge Philly's tandem. Desmond Bane out for Memphis, so can you really look at that? And also, are you seriously considering Bane to be of equal caliber? That's Ja Morant's team. And Desmond Bane's along for the ride. So you get into the Timberwolves with Russell and Edwards, and that team's underperforming, I think, to start the season. So the bigger picture here is that I don't think there's very few backcourts in the NBA actually playing well together. Right now, we've got a whole bunch of individual stars in the NBA. You look at Luka Doncic and what he's doing out in Dallas, but he is the focal point of that team. And that's why you look into backcourts. And that's why I say the Utah Jazz with Mike Conley and Jordan Clarkson those aren't stars that you would consider, but as far as backcourts go, those two together are playing some of the best basketball out of any of the backcourts in the league, which is really showing just an odd start to the season, I think, in the NBA. Because I think once we get to game 82, I don't think we'll be having these same conversations about all these backcourts. And I plan on revisiting where Trey and DeJounte fit in this conversation. But honestly, I'm putting Trey and DeJounte towards the maybe top three in NBA backcourts, simply for the fact of Trey Young isn't shooting the ball well, but he's still scoring. He's still getting points. He's still getting, you know, and that's got to get it how you can kind of thing. And DeJounte Murray is consistent, you know, throughout the season. He's not really having any big games, but he is very consistent throughout this. And so it's just strange for me. And I think it's it kind of shows you where you go from name recognition to actual play on the court. And for so many of these tandems in the NBA, the backcourts aren't playing well together, but there are individual stars who are really stepping it up. But Deshaun, before we get out of here, I do want to look at the upcoming schedule for the Hawks, as things don't get any easier for Atlanta.
No, they don't.
You think about, you started off the week in Philly playing the Sixers, who's, whether you like it or not, they're going to be a top Eastern Conference team. You then go face former champs, Milwaukee Bucks. You take them down. Then you go face the Boston Celtics at home. Now you got to go out on the road and you're still at home. Sorry. But at home to the Raptors. And then next week is the road trip when you've got to go to Cleveland. So it's like there are no breaks for the Hawks in their schedule right now.
It almost sounds like a Michigan State schedule almost at this point.
Don't start bringing your college basketball in here, Deshaun.
I'm not going to get on that rant, but I'm not sure whoever put the – I think Tom Izzo might have put this schedule together.
Okay.
For the Hawks, by the way. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Let me say this much, but there are also so much meaningful games, things that the Atlanta Hawks, I think, collectively as a unit are thinking about with this schedule. You don't think they don't remember a couple weeks ago where they went up to Air Canada and played Toronto on their home floor and what that looked like, what Pascal Siakam did to them? That's something that they're going to keep in the back of their mind. That's payback. That's James Brown, the big payback right there. Okay. And then while we're sitting here talking about some of the best duos, you told me who's at the top of your list. I'm sure that they see and they know what's going on. We were talking about Steph Curry dropping 50 points. Garland dropped about 50 points the other night. They're seeing these exact same things. They get a chance to play those guys and they know the love that everybody has been showing Cleveland. I tell people this all the time. When it comes to the Atlanta Hawks, and I'm gonna land my plane here. The Atlanta Hawks have to be the team that beats who they're supposed to beat, okay? Keep it, or also beat the teams that are of equal quality to them, and then at least be competitive against the teams that are better than them, okay? They have, for the most part, beaten the teams that they're better than, okay? The teams that are equal to them, I think we could be talking about the Cleveland Cavaliers in this situation, okay, who is still in a position where they're youthful. We know we can't talk about the Atlanta Hawks being youthful anymore. They've got a little bit of experience under their belt. They're not in the same conversation as some of these Cleveland Cavaliers slash, you know, Orlando Magics and Detroit Pistons. But Cleveland's on the younger side. They're still trying to figure some of these things out themselves. So they get a chance to play those games. Okay, so I think that these ones are very telling. That's going to be a heck of a game against Cleveland. I can't wait for that game because that is one of the games where I think you're really going to learn a lot about who you are as a team on both sides and how you intend to compete, not just in the NBA, but more so in the East.
And that's what
I want a little Cleveland. Tate's take. I want some Tate's take, Caleb. I need 30 seconds of Tate's take.
All right, before we get there, Cleveland is so dangerous because they're young, like because they're playing up to this level in that youthful phase of their roster construction. And you look at, you know, like with what the Hawks have coming up, a very experienced Toronto team. That experience hurt them the last time the Hawks saw them. And then for the Cavs, yeah, they're youthful and they're scoring at will, it feels like. And they've also, I think you've got some big men who are great defensively who are going to help them out as well. Like there's so many different pieces. The thing that I wanted to get to, yes, we will get to a Tate's take. The thing that I wanted to get to though is can the Hawks afford to go 0-3? Like a loss to Boston,
no.
A loss to Toronto, and a loss to Cleveland coming back home to play Sacramento?
No, I don't think so. I mean, can they afford you? Okay, here's the deal. A four-game losing streak, you definitely cannot do. That is an absolute no-no for where this team is at and where they're looking to be. A three-game losing streak is something that I think – if you're this early in the season still, Caleb, you can't afford that. I mean, you can afford that a little bit, but you don't want to treat it as if it's something that you can afford to do. You want to be in the conversation with some of the best in this league, some of the best in the East, competing, which they've been showing that they can do for the most part against some of the Milwaukees and some of the, you know, other teams in this league that are at the top. Those teams don't go on that many games of a losing streak. So that's where I really believe that even though I think this early they can afford it, certainly not middle through the end of the season they can afford it. But if it happens now, I think it's okay. The sky's not falling. But you can't walk in there with that type of mentality to say, it's still early. We can afford it right now. Let's just make sure that we got it all together later.
Yeah, I think that's – it will truly show the difference between winning 9 games to start the season to this point, and then how do you handle going up against some of the best teams in your conference? And if the Hawks do happen to go on a losing streak, I think that shows that the deficiencies really, really, really need some attention. And that would be, you know, the shooting essentially wouldn't have been fixed, I think, if you're reaching that point. It's just one of those, it's obviously worst case scenario for how the Hawks are going to, you know, with their schedule the next coming week. But it is something I feel like is realistic with you play this poorly like you did against Boston, and you will end up in a situation where you're 0-3 because I don't know yet how the Hawks match up against the Cavaliers. And I know how they match up against the Raptors, which is not well, which doesn't bode well towards winning. And I just wonder, you go on a 3-game losing streak. Does the finger pointing come out and all of the other things that goes into, you know, things not going well like you wanted to start the season? It's very early. I don't think nothing like this would define their season. But I think it's very realistic with having, you know, just played Boston, coming up and seeing Toronto, Cleveland, and Sacramento. Best case scenario feels like 2-1 through Toronto, Cleveland, and Sacramento, where, you know, then you think of the opposite and it's just, it's not a good place to go to. But I think it will get to the head of some of these problems for Atlanta. As like we said, you know, the schedule does not get easy for them in the next week. Obviously be able to talk after Toronto and Cleveland next Tuesday before they get through their holiday schedule. But Deshaun, before we get out of here, you have a Tate's take that I feel like I know what it is because I think we texted about a little bit during the Celtics game. And I don't even know I'm giving you the floor for this, but go ahead.
Number one, I still can't believe we're talking about Sacramento being a tough game for Atlanta, but they've been playing some damn good ball.
Best Best team in California. Best team in California, Deshaun.
Stop, Caleb. Cut it
out. I'm sorry. It's the truth.
The ultimate disrespect to all light-skinned. You know, I'm all about the light-skinned guys. All those light-skinned guys over there at Golden State. I'm LSU, hashtag light-skinned united. Don't disrespect us like that, Caleb. Here's my Tate's take, okay? You ready for this, Caleb?
I don't know that I am, but go ahead.
You are. Listen, I'm watching the other night. I'm in Indianapolis for the Champions Classic, and I'm watching this Kansas and Duke matchup, okay? Kyle Filipowski. Remember the name. When you watch Duke this year, Caleb, any of you guys out there that are watching, that are listening, Kyle Filipowski, true freshman, okay? True seven-footer. He's not a Plumlee. He's not McRoberts. He's not Ryan Kelly. He's not any of them. He's not Matthew Hurt. I'm going to tell you who he is. Kyle Filipowski is the next hated white guy at Duke. Keep your eyes and your ears open for this guy. It's mostly because he's that good, but also because he's just that passionate and he's just that fiery. When you think of the J.J. Reddicks, the Christian Leitners, the Grayson Allens, and all of these guys that tend to get that title, he's going to be your next one, Kyle Filipowski. He's a really good player.
I will have to remember that name. I love to root against Duke. I don't even know how I became a Tar Heels fan, and that fandom kind of goes in and out, obviously, with how good they are just because of how much I watch college basketball. But you're right, it's been a while since Duke's had somebody to like truly hate. You talk about Grayson Allen. When the Bucks were in town playing the Hawks, I was sitting like front row courtside as everybody was warming up, and one of the funny things was I had my foot kind of stuck out a little bit.
Yeah,
just naturally the way I was sitting. And I saw a player or somebody out of my peripheral vision walking up. And so I quickly moved my foot back. And when I looked up, it was Grayson Allen. And I leaned over to Lauren, one of the Hawks reporters next to me. And I was like, should have left my foot out.
Yeah, had you known it was Grayson Allen.
Man.
Of course you would. And that would have been nothing more, Caleb, than just a little taste of his own medicine from his college.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I'm honestly, I'm excited because we haven't had that. I feel like, am I forgetting someone since Grayson Allen that Duke really hasn't had that guy to hate? But you're telling me that that's coming back now, which is good for college basketball. Which I obviously know is a passion of yours. I thought you were going to mention the leg sleeves. No?
Nah. We'll get into leg sleeves fine. On the next episode, episode 7.
All right. Well, that's all the time we've got for today's episode. We'll be back next Tuesday to bring you another full episode. Like we said, after this interesting stretch, a couple games for the Hawks, is hopefully they don't fall into a losing pattern and they can kind of get out of this. But for my co-host Deshaun Tate, I'm Caleb Johnson. You guys have a good one.